Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Universal Law, set in the Human Chronicles universe, by T.R. Harris, narrated by Perry Daniels. Chapter 1. Adam Kane took a probe from the exam kit and placed the metal rod through a hole in the shattered skull, before gently pulling back the flesh and exposing the bloody mush that had once been a brain. The sickening injury was caused by what the natives called a malaquet, a type of weapon that was draped over a victim's head and then made to squeeze with equal pressure in all directions until bone fractured and eyes popped out. The skull fragments stayed together, somewhat, encased now in a flaccid bag of skin, while the brain turned to mush. And this was just one of the various methods the natives of Lindahl employed against their enemies. Scattered about the crime scene lay the victims of their latest terrorist attack, 19 in all, and with few displaying the same method of execution as the others. Lindahlese were nothing if not creative when it came to their killing techniques. They initially shot a few of the workers with energy weapons, before herding the rest of them into a park where they were systematically executed with an assortment of hand tools, including bludgeons, blades, presses, and more. It was a truly horrific scene, even for Adam. But as he discovered, this was more than just a simple attack by vindictive natives against the Maris Kliss employees now occupying the planet. This had been a ritualistic sacrifice of grotesque proportions, designed not only to rid the planet of the occupiers, but to instill terror in those who refused to leave. Adam thought this kind of ritualistic mutilation was a thing of the past on the more civilized worlds in the galaxy. But looking around at the bloody killing field, he could see he was mistaken.
"How could sentient beings do such savage acts of cruelty?"
said the MK representative, a hair-covered creature named Janor Kram.
"To rip bodies apart with such apparent gust and glee."
His yellow eyes were manic with both fear and anger. The victims were part of his local work crew. Adam didn't look up, preferring to keep his attention focused on the murder victim. Still, he gave an embarrassed shrug. Yeah, how could living beings do such a thing? He thought. Maybe I should start by asking the human race. In the scheme of things, the Lindahlese didn't have an exclusive on sadism, not when considering Adam's background. Although the cause of death varied, each of the dead had their right foot cut off and was now missing. Trophies? Adam wondered. If so, then pretty cumbersome keepsakes. He would have to learn more about Lindahlese ceremonial killings before he could give a definitive answer, but it was a good bet. He rose to his feet, allowing the angry MK supervisor to step in front of him.
"The native should have never been allowed back on the planet," he barked at Adam. "They have no right to be here. MK owns Lindahl now."
"The title transfer is being challenged," Adam said unnecessarily, which only inflamed the hairy alien even more.
"MK negotiated in good faith with the lead refugee groups for the purchase. We followed all universal laws. These terrorists are the disgruntled natives now disputing that transaction."
Janor managed a tight grin.
"And if they expect their rights to supersede those of MK, I assure you that will never happen."
"I'm not here to decide the politics of the situation," Adam said. "The refugees say they have a right to repel invaders to their world, and MK says it's not their world anymore. Either way, you can't go around killing each other, not on my watch."
"Your watch? A timepiece? I do not understand."
"Never mind," Adam said impatiently, waving off the comment. He looked to a small group of Lindalese, guarded by a combination of his enforcers and the mercenaries MK brought in to help squelch the terrorist activity. On the ground next to the guards were the bodies of 6 natives. According to Janor, the refugees had been caught nearby, although none carried weapons or showed signs of having been in a battle. But because they were found hiding within the local buildings, they were rounded up, tortured, and some killed. To MK, any native was a trespasser and subject to its own form of justice. That wasn't the standard by which Adam and his enforcers operated. All parties, including the Jurians, humans, refugees, and even MK, had agreed to a uniform set of basic laws that governed the dead zone. And since MK was operating as a company and not a government, it didn't have the right to make its own laws when it came to capital punishment. Both acts, the terrorism as well as the torture and murder of the prisoners, were against the law. Adam's law. And since he was visiting the planetary enforcer station at the time of the attack, the whole mess was dropped in his lap. Although he had a local deputy who was officially in charge of the investigation, he felt obliged to go along for the ride. As the marshal of the zone, he was now a convenient target for the MK officials' growing anger.
"You must order all natives to leave the planet," Janor continued. "Use your resources, or else MK will use ours."
"I can't do that. We didn't authorize the refugees to return to Lindahl," Adam said. "And according to the law, they haven't been denied access either. If they get to the surface, we can't remove them unless they break the law."
"Lindahl is our property. We can restrict access as we see fit."
"That's true. If you catch any of the natives, you must detain them until my enforcers can take custody. But you can't indiscriminately kill people simply for trespassing. And if you or your hired muscle insist on murdering innocent..."
"Innocent!" Janor exclaimed. "Look around you, Marshal Kane. Everything we have done here has been in self-defense."
"Did the 6 dead natives threaten you in any way? They weren't armed. And did any admit to being part of the raiding party?" Adam asked.
"They are savages. They admit to nothing. But they are here, and my crew is dead. They were involved."
"And that's what the investigation will determine." Adam signaled for his field commander, a huge Rigorian named Jove, to begin loading the prisoners into one of the transport trucks. The MK mercenaries tensed, refusing at first to allow the natives out of their custody. If the enforcers had not shown up when they did, Adam was sure all the prisoners would be dead by now. With a nod from Janor, the mercs backed away. Adam sighed as he surveyed the tragic scene once more. He was caught between a rock and a hard place, being able to sympathize with both sides of the conflict. First of all, years ago, Maris Kliss moved into the dead zone, and on their own dime began decontaminating whole worlds of the radiation left over from the attacks of the mad Eris Kration 7 years earlier. Then they sprinkled potent fertilizer on the surface, allowing nearly all of the 100 worlds in the zone to recover ecologically much faster than they would have naturally. But MK didn't do this out of the goodness of their heart. They wanted something in return. Recently, the company began offering the lead refugees from dozens of worlds lump-sum buyouts for ownership of their home worlds. Most of the refugee groups were already in the process of stripping their planets of anything of value and selling it off throughout the galaxy. This was great for the leaders, the elites from the planets who fled ahead of Kration's attacks with most of their wealth intact. They were only adding to it now. But the core group seldom numbered over 200 individuals from each race, sometimes leaving a million other refugees with the scraps that dribbled down to them. And now the elites were being offered an extravagant sum to surrender their worlds to MK. The lower-tier refugees protested, with the vast majority wishing to return to their homes eventually. They had never been keen on the salvage of their worlds, but as intense radiation ravaged the planets, they had little choice. That changed when MK cleaned up the planets. But now their so-called representatives were in the process of selling them out completely, leaving the remaining refugees high and dry. When the majority of the refugees protested, the elite simply signed the agreements with MK, took the credits, and snubbed their noses at their fellow natives. Hundreds of thousands never saw a chip from the transfer, while their betters made off like bandits. In the meantime, Maris Kliss took their highly questionable deeds and proceeded to stop all salvage operations and evict anyone who wasn't an employee or contractor of the company, including a fair number of natives who had repatriated to their home worlds despite no legal standing to do so. At first, the refugee groups elected new leaders and sought recourse through the legal system. But when fighting against the largest corporation in the galaxy, more significant than even the human Orion Cygnus Union, and second in wealth and influence only to the Jurian expansion, there wasn't much hope of them finding justice. Some of the outside negotiators, the humans included, asked why the refugees couldn't return to their homeworlds as employees of MK, thereby liberating them from a life in exile. But the regional director of the company would have none of it. He wanted only loyal employees working his worlds, and felt the returning natives would not have the same dedication. They would feel more privileged, more entitled. As he said, more like citizens rather than employees. Adam smirked when he first heard that. They would act more like, well, natives. Beings who had sprung into existence on the worlds and later evolved over billions of years to become the top of the food chain, the prime indigenous species on a planet. That was until MK and their lawyers came along. So instead of an endless and costly battle in the courts, many of the natives chose to slip back onto their reclaimed home worlds and launch violent resistance actions against MK and their employees, along with the mercenaries they hired to maintain security. Adam could see the motivations on both sides. MK was owed something for all the effort and money they'd spent bringing the worlds of the Dead Zone back to life. But the native refugees also deserved to be allowed to return to their home worlds, and not merely as worker bees. However, Adam thought it unfair that a handful of highly placed, wealthy, and influential refugees could make the decisions for all the survivors of a particular race. The full populations were never allowed to vote on whether or not to sell their planets to MK, and by then, the elites had already written off their former home worlds, as evidenced by the wholesale salvage taking place throughout the zone. Yes, Adam understood the arguments, on both sides. But as he told Janor, he was not there to render judgment. Instead, he was there to enforce the law. And until the powers that be made a definitive ruling in the case of the refugees versus Maris Kliss, he couldn't allow each side to go around massacring one another. The responsibility fell to him and his enforcers to maintain some semblance of peace. Expecting tranquility to go along with the peace was asking far too much. Chapter 2. One of the drawbacks of Adam's artificial telepathy device, even the enhanced ATD he currently carried, was that it didn't operate on auto mode. For example, for him to detect flash weapon energy signatures, he had to search for them consciously. Fortunately, he began monitoring the weapons of the MK mercenaries moments before, when Jove began moving the native prisoners to the transport, keeping an eye on the signals in case the Mercs had any surprises up their alien sleeves. That's when he noticed the line of additional energy signals encircling the crime scene. There were far too many for them to be rogue mercenary units. Besides, they were coming from within the buildings of the city, and from all directions. Adam engaged his throat mic.
Jove, alert your troops. We have hostiles closing in, all directions, approximately 50 or so, armed with energy weapons.
Natives?
The Rigorian inquired, his voice deep and rough as gravel.
Probably. They must be using the first attack to lure in more targets, targets with weapons. The workers had none. Set up a defense at the trucks. We're surrounded. I'll tell Janor.
Even as Adam moved across the killing field to find the MK supervisor, he was busy mentally identifying each of the energy weapons the natives carried. He could tell most were Zanfi rifles, which would give the attackers more range and battery charge than the handguns most of his troops had. The Mercs were a different story. They had rifles, but there were only 5 of them. Between them and Adam's enforcers, he had 12 troops to go up against 50. However, the one advantage Adam had was that he could sever the firing controls on the weapons with a mental command through his ATD. The drawback? He had to do it one at a time, and if an operator discovered the non-functioning firing circuit, a simple reset would get the rifle working again. It had also been a while since he'd done so many shutdowns, and it was taking far too long. By the time the natives were in range, half the Zanfis would still be active. And that was only part of the problem. The Lindalees had already proven they were efficient and ruthless fighters. They would be coming with their arsenal of specialized killing tools, determined to make an example of both his enforcers and the mercenaries. Was that the objective of the earlier massacre? To attract a larger group to kill? Adam was in one of the larger cities of Lindahl, and in a park near its center. The ground here was covered in a uniform coating of pale green grass, and not much more, with the air carrying a faint stench of fertilizer, as it did on most of the worlds in the zone. Any trees that may have once decorated the park had long since deteriorated in the savage radiation and been swept away by seasonal winds. There was no cover for the defenders, except for the vehicles in which they'd arrived. The enforcers came in 2 troop trucks, the MK representatives in 2 of their own. Fortunately, they were heavy-duty vehicles and would make sufficient cover if arranged adequately. At the moment, they weren't. They were scattered about the park and exposed on all sides to potential attack. By the time Adam reached Janor, Jove had his enforcers moving their transports into an L-shaped formation, front to rear. Adam would get Janor to move his vehicles into a similar layout and close the box. Given time, Adam could disable all the energy weapons. However, he had no way of stopping the more ancient torture tools of the natives.
"Listen up," Adam said as he stepped up to the MK official. "We have natives closing in on all sides, about 50 of them."
Janor looked around at the buildings surrounding the park.
"I see none," he scoffed.
"Trust me, they're coming. Get your transports to close up the square we're forming. We have no place to hide except behind the vehicles. Hurry, they're almost within range."
"How do you know this?"
"Just do it," Adam commanded.
This was when Adam's reputation as a badass helped cut through the resistance. Janor shuddered slightly at the intensity of Adam's tone before racing away, barking orders at the mercenaries. Through his ATD, Adam noticed how the natives picked up their pace, alerted to the discovery of their impending attack. He was afraid that would happen, but he had no choice. only one of the mercenary trucks was able to form up with Jove's vehicles before the first energy bolt shot into the park. As luck would have it, this first bolt targeted Adam. As he took the powerful level 2 hit in the back, he reasoned it was because the enemy saw him as the leader. His fancy enforcer uniform with the gold emblem on the shoulder was a dead giveaway. They were right. He might as well have had a bullseye painted across his forehead. He was thrown forward by the bolt, falling to the ground before two of the mercenaries raced over and took him by his arms. Level 2s aren't fatal to humans, but aliens didn't know that. All they could see was that he was alive and mad as a hornet. Of all the luck! Not only had he taken the first hit, but it came from one of the Xanfees he already disabled, and the operator reset. He was dragged to the three-sided truck enclosure where Janor knelt beside him.
You survive?
Yeah, my suit must have absorbed most of the force.
He didn't want to let the secret out about human resistance to the lower bolt levels. That had always been his ace in the hole. And now he had the added benefit of his ATD being able to absorb excess energy charge and vent it through a miniature quantum black hole in the device. He knew he could take at least 3 level 1 hits. Level 2s would be even easier to absorb, giving him more than double the strikes. He wasn't anxious to test his theory. Besides, there wasn't time. All around him, people were dying. The U-shaped truck enclosure was turning out to be more of a trap than salvation. The natives had moved much of their forces into a position where they could fire into the opening. The incoming fire sent his defenders diving under the vehicles or in the cabs to keep from being hit. The ones who climbed in the back of the trucks and shut the doors became trapped there. And when the 8 native prisoners attacked their enforcer guards with fists and feet, 3 of the guards in the truck with them died, which provided the prisoners with weapons. They burst out of the back of the vehicle and began firing point blank at the mercenaries. Although the escapees also died in the exchange, their deaths served a purpose. In only the first minute of the battle, Adam's 12-person force was down to 5. Adam was frantically working his ATD, shutting down more of the Xanfees. The rate of fire was down markedly, but it soon resumed. The natives weren't content to let their weapons go dead without figuring out why. And they knew their weapons. Within seconds of discovering their Xanfees weren't operating, reset buttons were pressed, and they were back at it again. Soon it was only Adam, Jove, Janor, along with 2 enforcers, all huddled on the short grass under one of the trucks. Earlier, the enforcers had scooped up a few of the Xanfees from the fallen mercs and were now firing at the attackers. For their part, the natives moved in synchronized, disciplined formation, making Adam believe they had military training. He had no idea what type of society the Lindalese had before creation, but it was apparent they were no pushovers. A quick count of the active and moving energy signatures coming from the native weapons told Adam the attackers were down to just under 40. That was still a formidable force against Adam's 5. If he didn't do something proactive, they would soon run out of battery charge or be picked off by the relentless incoming fire. He took an inventory. He had his ubiquitous and reliable 45 double-action revolver holstered around his waist. It was his signature weapon, now part of his uniform and persona. He also had an MK-47 advanced bolt launcher with 3 spare battery packs. The current pack was drained, so he slipped in a fresh battery. He had 30 shots in total. He could also take one of the Xanfees from an enforcer. The sad truth was that it was coming down to him having to take matters into his own hands. He could withstand a lot of energy bolts, especially level 2s, which was the standard setting on Xanfee and MKs. They were effective against all aliens. All except humans. There was no reason to bump up the intensity to level 1, since it would cut bolt capacity from 10 to 5. He would use that to his advantage. The other advantage he had was that he knew exactly where the enemy was located by the energy signatures of their weapons. He also had his human speed and coordination. He rolled over.
Jove, cover me. I'm heading for the street on the left in that row of barricades.
The barricades had once enclosed a small performance arena at the side of the park.
You are leaving?
You cannot leave us,
Janor protested.
We need your firepower.
You need me out there more than in here. If I don't do something, we're all dead in a matter of minutes. Now everyone, lay down suppressing fire on the left. Just don't shoot me while you do it. Get ready. Now!
Adam burst out from under the truck, running across the sward with flash bolts zipping past him, coming from both in front and behind. The covering fire wasn't much, coming from only 4 guns. Adam didn't fire, saving his battery charge for when it counted. The gravity of Lindahl was even lighter than Jurian standard, giving Adam an added spring in his step. He bounded toward the stacked stone half-wall surrounding the arena at such speed that the targeting computers in the Xanfees didn't have time to lock on. It only took 5 seconds for him to reach the barricades. Through his ATD, he already knew 3 aliens were hiding behind the barrier. In truth, he didn't need his ATD to know that, since all 3 were poking up over the wall firing energy bolts at him. At about 10 feet out, Adam planted his right foot and jumped, soaring into the air and hurtling the wall. The aliens swung the barrels of their weapons skyward in a futile attempt to sight the flying target. Adam fired down as he flew over, killing one of the natives. He landed, rolled forward, and then came up on 1 knee, facing back toward the wall. 2 quick pops from his Xanfee, and it was all over. His move caught the other natives off guard. They now abandoned their static positions and began moving off to get better angles on their target. Their smooth and efficient disbursement confirmed Adam's suspicion that these particular natives had military training. He fell in behind the short wall while reaching out with his ATD. He was weary of having to continually sever the firing controls of the enemy weapons, only to have them re-engaged seconds later. The natives were catching on, even if they didn't understand what was happening. They had to figure it was some kind of jamming device deployed against them. But after learning a quick reset would get them back in the fight, they didn't skip a beat after that. Because of this, Adam would have to take them out the hard way, with brute strength and speed, along with a little help from his ATD. In the heat of the moment, there was little time to experiment with his new brain interface device, but the one thing he did try was to see if he could overlay what he saw in his mind with his eyesight. It was easier than he thought, and a moment later he saw shining white dots interspersed within the buildings surrounding the park. This would make it easier to identify the targets without having to retreat into his mind, searching for a new location. He ran off in crouch for the nearest cluster of hostiles. There were 6 of them on the other side of a low swell to one side of the park, with a small creek at the base. As he sprinted forward, flash bolts filled the air, with one striking him in the left arm. He shrugged it off, grimacing at the pain. Although he wasn't seriously hurt, the damn plasma bolt still burned like a bitch. He came over the rise and opened up on those lying on the grass on the other side, each shot dead on target, although he caught another level 2 squarely in the chest. He could feel his ATD heating up under the skin below his right armpit, indicating that the quantum black hole had popped into existence and was doing its job of venting the excess charge from his body. Now he moved toward the buildings.
More shots flared out from windows and doors. A bolt caught him in the leg and he fell from the impact.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?